Blog Talk Radio.
Very special time tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern time, and we're coming to you live from Wilmington, North Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey, and welcome to ScaryCast Tuesday. We've got an interesting show tonight, and glad to have everybody here with us that is. And first of all, I want to introduce one of our co-hosts, Matt Delf. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
I'm doing excellent. Looking forward to the show.
Well, good. Yeah, we're glad to have you here. And we've got, well, actually, Matt is not a co-host tonight. He's a guest, along with Jamie Whitaker. And she's here with us. Last time I saw Jamie was at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. Hey, Jamie, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Glad to have you here. All right. First of all, I wanted to make a nice announcement. Sometimes it's good to make announcements on events coming up. But on August the 4th, at the Dillard House in Dillard, Georgia, everybody needs to join us for the North Georgia Film Festival and Awards, put on by your presenting committee, which is Dr. John Stamey and Kip Ramey. Our theme is Horror in the Hills. That's right, Horror in the Hills. That's why we're announcing it here. And the three films that we are going to honor were all made in North Georgia, and they are Blast Fighter, Killer Grizzly, and soon to be the king of American horror films and getting so much traction based on the great James Dickey novel, Deliverance. And Deliverance stars one of Raven County's own, that's Billy Redden, and so we're going to be pleased to have Billy there. So everybody needs to join us August the 4th, 3 to 9 p.m. at the Dillard House in Dillard, Georgia, for the North Georgia Film Festival. Tickets will be on sale. They'll be $10 a piece. Tickets will be on sale very soon for that event, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be there. Kip Ramey and I will be co-hosting. It's going to be a lot of fun. So, and in fact, we'll have Kip on our show here talking about Horror in the Hills. So now, Matt is one of our regular and good co-hosts, and he came to me with a great idea. He said that he and Jamie Whitaker had been out exploring, and come to find out, they had gone through a bit of a trail of the last days of Bonnie and Clyde, Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker, two of the most famous outlaws of the first part of the last century, of the 30s. And, I mean, they were something else. They're known for Peach Ice Cream in the movie Bonnie and Clyde, which won an Academy Award. It's a great film starring Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway. That was really a good film. So, anyway, Matt, tell everybody, like you told me, tell us a little bit about the show tonight, and you and Jamie start talking, and I'll ask you questions when I feel the need to ask one. How's that?
Sounds good. Sounds good. Well, it actually had sparked our interest. We've always been interested in Bonnie and Clyde, but we had actually seen, it's been a while back, I'd seen some info on their the massacre site, if you want to call it that, the ambush site. And it wasn't too far, and of course, you know, I travel a lot, and Jamie, my sidekick there, she's of course she's down with me and all this stuff, but we were like, well, we need to check that out and see what kind of vibes we get there, and because we've had different reports of you know, like haunting stuff and very similar, so we looking it up, and we're like, well, that's not too far from where we were at. And so that afternoon, we kind of just went down that way and stopped by and checked out the site. We had noticed there's a museum in the little town of Gibson there, and the museum, what was interesting.
Matt, excuse me, which state is Gibson in?
Okay, Louisiana. It's in Louisiana. I believe they were ambushed on Highway 154, and that's 8 miles from where the museum is. And we had, what was interesting, we couldn't go into the museum because it was already closed by the time we got out there the holiday weekend, this past weekend. So we went ahead and proceeded to the ambush site. And what was interesting was we were looking at the actual museum was the last cafe. It was the last meal for Bonnie and Clyde. They had stopped in there, and it was reported, this is the funny thing, was because I eat a lot of fried bologna, but I microwave mine. And so Jamie
Matt, now hold on. There will be no microwaving of bologna on Scary Cast, okay? You'll have to pay for your sins, okay?
All right. But so Jamie kind of had to, she made hers the other night, of course, and kind of had to, you know, try and say hers looked a little better than mine from the microwave. But, you know, that's up for debate. That's up for debate. But she did make a good fried bologna sandwich. But what was interesting was she got a looking, and the last meal here, just here recently, we've had this kick for the fried bologna. And what was interesting was Clyde and Bonnie's last meals, they got it to go. Clyde had a fried bologna sandwich, and Bonnie had the BLT. Now, I don't like BLTs, which was kind of interesting, because I'm like, well, I don't like BLTs. I wonder who was eating what. And as Jamie had done some research, and she had seen that it was Bonnie who ate the BLT, which Jamie happens to like. Not me, too many vegetables, but it was really interesting, all these synchronicities that was going into this effect. Now when we get down there to the site, there's been different reports of hearing screaming at night, been seeing figures on the road there at that site. But when we arrived out there, it was kind of in the evening, but we didn't feel nothing threatening. The energy was like a lovable energy. I mean, it was like two people in love. That's what we felt there. It wasn't a threatening or a scared or any type of different vibe, which it could be different for other people, and it could be different at different times, which, you know, maybe coming up on the anniversary date of the massacre, that you know, it could be different if we went there. It could be a different vibe then. But when we got there, it was nothing but just straight loving vibe. It wasn't nothing bad. It was, you could feel the romance, it felt like, of Bonnie and Clyde, the connection, because they were instantly in love. And Jamie can tell you a lot about the history of them, too.
Right. And Jamie, first of all, glad to have you here. And I wanted to ask you, for about a minute, would you give like the thumbnail sketch of what Bonnie and Clyde were known for and were infamous for before you talk about their relationships? Would that be okay? So because not everybody knows exactly about Bonnie and Clyde. I'm a little bit older. We studied them in high school. I mean, they were a huge deal. They were an outlaw group, an outlaw family. An outlaw couple, unlike they par excellence. I mean, they were some of the best and most feared in the country. So, all right, Jamie, tell us just a quick little sketch of Bonnie and Clyde in general, and then get to the great one of the greatest romances of all time.
All right. Well, they were now Clyde started long before, well, not that long, because they were practically kids. I mean, they're in their early 20s. So he already had a pretty long rap sheet by the time they met, but they were it was instant love. And like 21 months, they went on this crime spree. It was a small gang. There are discrepancies in the stories, of course, and depending on which side you're on, are you team Bonnie and Clyde, or are you team, police officer, kind of how the facts come across differently from different, perspectives or whatever. So, they had about a 21 month crime spree where they were, mostly small crimes, though. They really didn't commit anything really huge, and they weren't really that great at it. Like some of the bigger, your bigger criminals were paying people off and stuff like that, and they weren't. They were just going along with these smaller robberies, mostly robberies. There were 13, there were 13 deaths. I forget how many it was that they had. Civilians versus cops. I believe it's 4 civilians and 9 police officers. But the thing is most of it was always shoot first. Everybody was shoot first. So it was kind of every time they were ambushed, they had to, fight their way out. And their biggest thing was they were really good at escaping. He loved the fast cars. So his cars were faster than the police officers, and he's a really good driver. He was known to be pretty good at that, and they had the good ammunition. They had all the good weapons and so on and so forth, so the police couldn't keep up with them, really, was their main thing. But they weren't that great at what they did. And he actually, his whole crime spree started stealing turkeys and chickens, so it was the Great Depression. It was a little bit different, then. And trying to pick out the highlights before we get into, why, certain places would be haunted and so on and so forth. They were a small group, the Barrow Gang. So it was Bonnie and Clyde and Clyde's brother, Buck, and his wife, Blanche, and Ray Hamilton and W.D. Jones. And, of course, they were basically ratted out and set up by one of the members' fathers because they had a tendency that they knew what was going, where they would be, because they would go back and visit family. So it's kind of interesting that you don't always get the same perspective. You hear that they're these hardened criminals, they're just awful, going around, shooting everybody up or whatever. But there's kind of a different perspective on, from different people. So it's hard to say whether they were, whether they were cold-blooded killers or they were just a couple of kids, basically. And maybe kind of a combination of both. Sometimes they were pretty shoot to kill, and sometimes they would let people go because they had been kind, or they were known to. Clyde gave away, he stole a tire and gave it to somebody that needed it, an older man that needed it, and stuff like that. So it's just interesting the way they, their whole little life, and to look at it as 21 months doesn't seem like that long, It's like they really burned fast, and then, like I said, it all came to an end pretty abruptly.
That's very interesting. Matt, do you have some commentary on that?
Yeah, it started out, Bonnie, she was actually married to another individual, and he was put in prison or whatever, but whenever she had met Clyde, they said that there was the, this is where the love story part comes in. There was an instant connection. They had connected. Her husband was still in jail, whatever, but he totally forgot about that dude because they had this love. I mean, she never turned, well, never turned on Clyde. They were young. They both grew up poor. Clyde had grew up, and him and his family were living under a wagon, and then they had got enough money set up to buy a tent. So the only thing he's ever known was the poor lifestyle. Same way with Bonnie. She had never known the rich lifestyle. But a lot of people tried to portray Bonnie as this killer because there was a shootout in Joplin, Missouri there, and they were staying. This is the longest they've stayed at a hotel. And they stayed there for like 13 days, I believe. And
yeah,
it was on April 13th is when these cops had come there, and they got in a shootout with the cops. And back in those days, a lot of the people were, the cops would just shoot to kill. They wouldn't say, hey, stop, whatever, if they seen something. So they were usually fired upon first, and most of their deaths come in return fire as they tried to escape. And they had left a camera because they left most of their stuff. They got away, but they had left their camera, and that's where a lot of these pictures come from. And they were – it shows them, like, Bonnie with a cigar. She doesn't smoke cigars. She just had it in her mouth. They were just taking pictures, holding guns on each other, acting kind of crazy. But they said that Bonnie had never actually fired a shot at anyone, and they always portray her as the one that was the evil – behind it and all this stuff. She was along for the ride. She loved Clyde. Clyde loved her. And so portraying her as the main evil one in the thing from a lot of these shows and other stuff, that's just a totally different perspective that they try to take from these photos that they had. But what's interesting is that, well, Clyde had already killed a man in prison when he was in there, but another guy took the rap for it. I don't know exactly what happened, but Clyde had beat the man with this pipe. And
I think he only hit him one time with a lead pipe. And then the other guy came in, the gentleman that took the rap for it came in with basically a knife and stabbed him a bunch of times. So he was listed as actually stabbed to death. But the other guy took the rap for it.
So, you know, but he got out, and that's whenever they met. And, of course, you know, they fell in love. Kind of a weird twist to it is, you know, you got these different hauntings and stuff in these different places. And where was that place at? They had a ballroom. They said that they know that they at least visited there once. It was one of their happy times together.
That's a Baker Hotel, and it's kind of hard to say if they actually did or they didn't, because they would have used aliases, and they didn't tend to stay at the hotel. So there's some speculation there if it was or, you know, was not them, but they are said to be seen in the ballroom. They didn't tend to stay in hotels very often, though. So it's kind of maybe not. Whether they, you know, whether they were there or not, but that is one of the biggest rumored hauntings is there in that ballroom, and maybe I think it was one of the rooms or something like that they were thinking was Bonnie and Clyde.
But it was happy. They were happy. They were dancing.
Right.
They weren't. It wasn't a bad haunting or anything like that. You can just see them dancing one of their happy times together. And so, you know, you could hear all these different perspectives, but the main thing was that Bonnie and Clyde is what makes it so everybody so in tune with it is it was like a true love story. She loved him no matter what. He loved her no matter what. And they stuck by each other. And when we went to that that site, it was, I mean, it's like you could feel the love. The one of the markers, the marker that kind of like a huge stone I'd posted on the post on Facebook, you can see it's been shot at, it's been shot up, but there was a plaque, a memorial plaque, honoring these, lawmen that killed them, and it has a plaque honoring them, and somebody took it. So somebody stole that plaque honoring the
and that
marshals
has been,
and
but
stuff.
That was, what, maybe 2 weeks ago that it was just
stolen.
Yeah,
it wasn't very long.
Mm-mm.
And we were talking about going there before then, weren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that just came up because we were talking about we would be near it, so we can go check it out. So we didn't get to see that because it was just taken. So.
Yeah, we seen the empty stand that it was on.
Mm-hmm.
And it appeared to be two crosses there, but it looks like they've been knocked down or tore down there at the site. I don't know if that was actual where they were supposedly killed. The highway looks the same pretty much as it does in the photos from back then. It's just paved now instead of dirt. It was a good vibe, though. It wasn't nothing bad. Now, a lot of your hauntings, they say, come from the car, the actual car. And there was a lot of stuff that went on after their death. And Jamie can go into more detail about that.
I believe he was killed on with the first shot to the head. They don't even know exactly how many rounds were fired at the car, but it was at least 150 shots. And the original thought was Bonnie was shot 26 times and Clyde was shot 17 times. But research, they're saying that it could have possibly been 50 each. But she still had the half-eaten sandwich in her lap and a magazine. And, I mean, when they left the diner, the gentleman, one of the gang members' fathers, helped to set them up. So they had him set up on the side of the road, broke down, hoping that they would stop to help him. And they did. They saw the truck and stopped to help him. And they basically opened fire. Again, there's different stories on whether they even warned them or if they just, you know, went straight shoot to kill. But there were, like I said, at least 150 shots fired. So, I mean, the car, there are pictures shown online. You can see that, you know, her slumped over on him. They say that you can hear certain times, you can hear her screaming because he was shot first. And so, I mean, she could see what was happening and she knew what was, you know, what was going on. And they were well aware that eventually that was going to be how it ended. And she wrote poems and stuff like that. Like Matt said, there were poems and everything else that were confiscated from the Joplin house. And a couple of days before this, she had a long poem written about, and I mean, it almost describes this down to T, except she says that they were buried together, which unfortunately they weren't buried together like they wanted to be, side by side. After everything settled down, the car was taken into town, basically paraded into town with, it just had like a sheet over it. And, it broke down in front of a school kids were out at recess. They come out and like pulled the sheet off of it. And then it's, like I said, it's paraded through town. And eventually, when it comes to a stop, there are all of these people start coming into town to look at it because they went to the diner, the same diner that they had gotten their sandwiches from, and got on the payphone to call to say that they did get Bonnie and Clyde, that they that their mission was successful. And I believe it was only a posse of six officers that were hiding out in the bushes. Now, after everything, crowds just droves of people were around the car just trying to cut off and rip off anything they could get their hands on, shirt pieces. Somebody tried to take his Clyde's trigger finger. I mean, somebody tried to cut his ear off. They were taking chunks of her hair and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. So they're overall very, very disrespectful with the car, everything around the car. So the car is now in a museum, I believe, in Las Vegas. And it's in a glass case, so it can't be touched or anything like that. So there's a lot more trauma around the car than there was even the site, the ambush site. And that's what's said to be haunted more than anything is around the cars. People see a couple, they, you know, kind of see it out of the corner of their eye and, you know, see people standing by the car out of the corner of their eye, and then you turn and you look and you don't see anything. I'd like to get near the car to get to see if it has see what kind of vibes I can pick up on it. But I would say the ambush site didn't have, at that time, it didn't have the aggressive vibes that, or any of the tension or fear or apprehension or anything. They accepted what was going to happen. So when we were there, there wasn't any of that, even for as much violence as there was. But then they paraded the car through town, there was a whole lot more disrespect and chaos around that car than there was anything else. So that would be the...
Now, this is Dr. John. I have got a question that I have wanted to ask for about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Do you know about the fact that there were actually two children by Bonnie and Clyde?
No, I was wondering about that. I haven't found anything. I haven't found anything
There were. And it's like,
right.
Where in the world did they go? Mm-hmm. They are for real. And it's like, and it might be that they were taken by grandparents and never told who they were. There was for
mm-hmm.
sure one child, and maybe the second child was a miscarriage. But there was at least one child from the union of Bonnie and Clyde.
Right.
And I can feel it. I couldn't find any
actual information on that, which, you know, that doesn't mean, because it was so easy to hide stuff in. I mean, the Great Depression was rough. So, you don't have people living in situations that can be tracked by the government.
Right. I mean, and what I can tell you is that my grandmother's sister, when she was 14, had a child, and she was whisked off to Minnesota because the family was embarrassed, and they brought the child back
mm-hmm.
7 years later as a cousin. You know what I mean? I mean, so
right.
you could
right.
do that back then, and that was 1931. And you could do anything
mm-hmm.
back then and get away with it. And just, you could say,
mm-hmm.
well, this is so good, and that's it. But there is definitely the spirit of at least one, if not two children. And you know what? We might want to ask Robin McRae if she could, you know, Matt, and I think it would be wonderful if we could ask Robin to help us track the child down. Because there was one, I believe there was one that lived long enough to reach adulthood. Don't know about the other one, the girl, but the boy lived long enough to adulthood. And so we'll see if we can get Robin to help us track that down. Is that okay, Matt?
Yeah, I'm interested now in the whole bloodline because I was not aware of a child. So that's very interesting.
And it's speculation, so it's kind of but the vibe is there. So, Matt and I were talking earlier about possibly doing some remote viewing. I could see if I could do some remote viewing to the past of the, you know, the ambush site and stuff like that. So the problem,
well,
you know, of course, like it.
Jamie, I tell you what. I'm going to ask that you wait to do a remote viewing until we get you guys on here in 2 weeks. How would that be?
Okay,
like
we'll
wait
to do the remote.
And I would like to ask you to do it. It's kind of like Jessica Jones. You know, she does stuff live. So I would like to ask you if you would to wait and do it lifetime. Is that okay? I think it'd be fun.
We'll talk about it. I've never done a remote viewing. I've never done a remote viewing live, so.
Well,
we're just talking about it. Yeah. We're just talking about it because I don't know if that's what you would even call it, because I look at the past part, you know, it's like remote viewing, but sometimes it's the past. So,
right. Well, I mean, I just did like something here. I had no idea that there were children until I got told that. And I'm sitting here at my desk.
Yeah.
And I was told that there were children. There were two children. There was a boy and a girl. The girl was younger. The girl may have died, some whatever. The boy lived to adulthood, and whoever he was did not know. He did not know.
I was going to say,
the gigantic,
he may not have known who he was.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a grandparent sheltered him from that mistakenly, because he would have been one of the most famous sires of a robbery of a crime family in history. I mean, it would have been incredible had he known who he was. But I think he just kind of lived his life.
All of the anybody that any of the members of the family were connected with were all tried for, you know, as accomplices and for harboring criminals and things like that. So, if it were possible to hide anybody, I feel like they would have done that because, even the moms were convicted of, of harboring criminals. And I think they got 30 days in jail or something like that because they were older women and,
Well, they could certainly send them to go to Aunt Alice's in Minnesota. I mean, you know, they could do anything.
Right.
But I truly think that is a very, very interesting thing. It is, and so we'll talk a little bit more about that. I'd love to have you guys back in 2 weeks. Would 2 weeks give the two of you time to do some more investigation and some more research and come back with some more findings?
Possible.
Okay, good. Well,
I'd like to look at Joplin as well. They've done some investigations on the little apartment that they stayed in, because like Matt said, they stayed there 13 days, April 1st through April 13th. And so the actual little place, you can still find little bullet holes and stuff like that. I mean, it still exists. It's a little garage apartment type building. And so you can see where they liked the place because they had a 360-degree view of everything. The walls were limestone, so the bullets couldn't come through very well. They could see, they could see what was going on. It was a garage apartment, so they had access to their vehicles downstairs and all that. So they were actually able to sit there and almost live in a home situation for 13 days, where neither one of them had really had that before. And they had there were a handful of them there. They had, I believe, the brother, Buck, and his wife, Blanche, and a friend, William Daniel Jones. So there were a handful of them there and actually having almost a normal life for a couple of weeks until that shootout. And that's where two officers were killed there too. So, and they, when they raided the place, they didn't they didn't realize they had Bonnie and Clyde there. They just thought they were the criminal activity in the area had was a little bit higher than it had been, and then one of the neighbors was super nosy and was always listening to their conversations. So they didn't, but they didn't expect it to be Bonnie and Clyde when they knocked on that door.
Yeah, they thought it was bootleggers,
so,
I believe.
Yeah, they did not, they didn't think it was Bonnie and Clyde. They thought it was somebody else. And I believe one of the girls, they don't know who, one of the girls said, hold on, I'll come to the door when I get dressed. And that's when, you know, that's when it all broke loose. So, again, there, you can still see places like that where the bullet holes were and stuff like that. So, but it's not likely to be Bonnie and Clyde there. It's more likely to be the officers that were killed or, you know, some kind of residual energy or something, because again, they had accepted their fate when they started. So it's not going to be haunted like that.
Yeah. Read some, you got the poem. You got the poem, her
poem
that she had written. Yeah. Like a couple days right before all this went down, she had written this poem, and it's kind of famous because she's describing, they know their destiny, they know their fate and all that stuff, and you've got that poem. Read a couple parts of it so you kind of get the feel that, you know, she knew what was going to happen. They knew their ending and so forth. So, yeah, if you can, read a couple.
Absolutely, Jamie. We'd love to have you read some of that, okay?
It's a pretty good long one, too, and she had several of them that were confiscated from the Joplin House, but this was after the Joplin House. You've read the story of Jesse James, of how he lived and died. If you're still in need of something to read, here's the story of Bonnie and Clyde. Now, Bonnie and Clyde are the Barrow Gang. I'm sure you've all read how they rob and steal, and those who squeal are usually found dying or dead. There's a lot of untruth to these write-ups. They're not so ruthless as that. Their nature is raw. They hate the law, steal pigeons, spotters, and rats. They call them cold-blooded killers. They say they're heartless and mean, but I say this with pride. I once knew Clyde when he was honest and upright and clean, but the law fooled around and taking him down and locking him up in a cell, till he said to me, I'll never be free, so I'll meet a few of them in hell. The road was dimly lighted. There were no highway signs to guide. They made their minds up if all roads were blind, they wouldn't give up until they died. See, so it's like, it's literally she's describing, I mean, I guess they would have gone down most of these back roads and what have you anyway. But, I mean, what she's describing is exactly, you know, exactly how the area that they died in, and saying that, you know, these rumors that were said, I mean, they tried to be decent people, but it didn't, you know, turn out that way. And they knew that the end to their, they would have to be punished for their crimes or whatever, but it wasn't like what they were saying. They weren't cold-blooded killers quite like they were saying, like the media tried to make them out to be, and so on and so forth. The police needed help. They couldn't keep up with the criminal activity during the Depression because the criminals had more firepower and faster automobiles and stuff like that. So they had to try to find a way to get the public to help. And a lot of these criminals, they were, the public loved them, you know? So, but that was one of hers. And during, she was arrested and spent a couple of months in jail, and she wrote poems while she was in jail. Of course, Clyde waited for her, and, you know, Clyde did some time in jail too, towards the beginning, before, I believe it was right before their little crime spree. And she broke him out one time. She smuggled a gun in, and then he got caught again pretty quick after that. And, you know, she waited for him until he got out. And then they went on their little crime spree. So she was known for writing poetry and stuff, which is interesting. And they were known for, they were considered a relatively decent-looking couple. They were completely different from most of the other criminals at the time. You know, they liked their clothes dry cleaned, apparently. It was one of the things I was reading. They made sure they had decent-looking clothes and stuff. Although they lived a hard, you know, rough life, they were trying to live in this sort of in a fantasy, love and on the run and this just kind of magical crime spree life that they lived. But she wrote this just days before.
You know, Jamie, I've got a question for you. And I don't mean this to be harsh in any way, but from the pictures that I saw, Bonnie was not necessarily a really beautiful woman. Is that correct?
Look, they said that they were decent looking for the time, because I didn't find either one of them that great looking either, but that's what they said at the time. So people looked different back then.
Here's what I had read, is that Bonnie was probably not a very good looking woman. She looked like she'd grown up hard and, you know, a lot like grandmother in the Depression era, and that Clyde did look, had a little bit better look about him. It wasn't great, but that Clyde,
he didn't
you
look
know,
great
a little
either.
Bit of it. But I mean, would you say, you know, and this is a question to you, would you say that Bonnie was probably not a really great looking woman? She certainly didn't look like Faye Dunaway in the movie. And Clyde was not a great looking guy, but he was kind of a genuine looking, kind of homey, pleasant looking guy. Would you say that might be a good description of him?
Well, they were said, again, that was a different, it was based on different perspectives. They were considered to be, and I think a lot of it was just their persona, that they were considered to be a decent looking couple. Now, looking at the pictures, I'm having a hard time with it, but it's, like I said, it was in the 1930s. So, but people
And then when you look at Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, I mean, they're two of the best looking people that ever lived, you know? I mean, it's hard to say Faye Dunaway is not an absolutely gorgeous woman, and the Warren Beatty's not one of the most handsome men that ever lived. So I mean, who they got to play them and portray them in the movie was certainly not like what they were like. Okay, Jamie, I think maybe let's end this discussion. I probably shouldn't have gotten off on this one. Is that okay?
Well, they, that was part of the thing, though, because, like I said, people loved them. So, but there's no telling, because, you know, when they say, I don't know, they make it magical, they make it different, and so you've got your team, Bonnie and Clyde, and then you've got your the other side that, you know, so the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Jamie, I believe you're 100% right that always the truth is somewhere in that great vast middle. And it's not, you know, it's not one way or the other. And they were kind of like, if you had to put it this way, and please, Matt and Jamie, see if you agree, they were truly like America's criminals. America kind of took heart to them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Would you
they
agree?
Did, and it was because they were just, they were totally in love. They were solid. You know, they waited for each other. They did everything together, and you couldn't separate them, you know? And that was during the Great Depression, everybody needed some kind of inspiration for something, you know? Everybody needed something to love and something to, you know, like I said, just something to be inspiring. And they were it. And like I said, they weren't the hardened criminals that a lot of people, like they didn't go around just, 13 is not a huge number compared to some of the, you know, the, just the cold-blooded killers and stuff that was, you know, the things that were going on during the Great Depression. It was just a hard time, I think, for everybody.
I do got to say, though, what you talk about how they lived, you know, this fantasy life. They didn't live, they lived the reality.
Mm-hmm.
They actually lived the fantasy life. They had a true love, and that's what everybody, that's what makes them so great, is Bonnie never switched up on Clyde. Clyde was dedicated to her. She was dedicated to him. They were inseparable. They had each other's back. It was a true love story. Their love was true. And that's what everybody flocks to because they see that and people wish they had that in life, especially during the Great Depression. The whole love story behind it, you know, she would never turn on him. He would never turn on
and
her.
And he tried.
They had each other.
He tried to get her to leave the gang several times, but she wouldn't. And it said that she, even though some of the claims were that she was a cold-blooded killer and all of that, when it comes down to the actual history of it, it doesn't seem like she did anything other than reload the guns. And she wouldn't leave him, even though, like I said, he tried to get her to leave the gang and all of that. She wasn't going anywhere. So,
and see, people,
everybody, America loves
them. They wish they had that. Yeah, people wish they had that in life. They wish they had that love in life. And that's what they were. I mean, they were, he was total loyal. She never switched up on him. She would not, you know, total dedication, loyalty. And people seen it, and you could feel it in their, just, I guess, in their presence. They were totally in love. And that's what made them more heroes than anything.
Excuse me, I want to address this. It was never Clyde Barrow, and it was never Bonnie Parker. It was always Bonnie and Clyde. And that's how they were all, am I correct? They were always known as Bonnie and Clyde. They were a unit.
Exactly.
And
they were
I mean, they had a small little, you know, group of, I mean, it was a gang, a small, very small gang, but it was, you know, you had people coming and going. But never Bonnie. Bonnie and Clyde were always, the only time they were separated was when one or the other was in jail. And like I said, Bonnie snuck a gun in so that Clyde could get out of jail. They were always, and a lot of times when you're looking at hauntings and stuff like that, you're going to have your typical unfinished business. You're going to have, you know, this feeling of fear and unresolved things and so on and so forth. But they didn't really have any of that. They were, they had accepted what was going to happen before it even happened. And, you know, they just went with it and they had each other. And I said, you don't get a lot of, there aren't a lot of good stories about the haunting. Because I said they were just, as long as they had each other, they were good. So that's what I found. Cause I dug and like I said, when we were there, I would like to go back on the anniversary date and see if it was different then, or maybe a couple of days before, because the police officers that staked the place out, you know, they may, and I'd like to know which sides of the road they were on and stuff, because I'd imagine they were on both sides of the road, because we walked down that little trail there, you know, somewhere around there, they had to have been hiding in the bushes. So around the anniversary, I'd like to check it out.
I'm going to make a proposal to you too. When is the, what day is the anniversary?
May 23rd,
Yeah, May 23rd. I believe it was 1934 was when the, so they staked the place out for a couple of days prior.
Well,
so.
Here's what I would like to suggest. We're in 2023 right now, and 2024 would be which anniversary? The 80th?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it was 1934.
Because that's going to be 90, wouldn't it?
That'd be the 90th anniversary. So here's what I would like to propose. I would like to go with Matt and with Jamie, and I would like to be there, and I want to pick my own investigator to go with me. And Matt, you might can guess it's an investigator from somewhere near Clarksville, Tennessee, because I would like to have him there.
Elijah, yeah, I think I know. Yep.
And I would like for the four of us to go on the 90th anniversary. And I'm going to call Elijah right now and tell him that he better get ready because that's where we're going, and that's it, you know. When I throw down the gauntlet, that's the way it's going to happen. I think it'll be one of those exciting investigations, and we need to start publicizing it now that we are going to do it. Matt, do you like that?
Of course. You know I'm always down for an investigation.
Yeah, but, I mean, I want to start publicizing that the four of us are going to go there and investigate this. And I'd like to have Robin on the phone. And we'll see what we can do. We'll see if we can find the spirits of Bonnie and Clyde, America's, how can we put it? They were certainly America's criminals.
You can't say America's sweethearts, but kind of.
Yeah,
they were America's criminals. But everybody loved, I mean, there's just a love for Bonnie and Clyde that we've had for years and years and years. I mean, you know, look, Bonnie and Clyde, they get Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway, they win Academy Awards for everybody. It is one of the most famous and beloved stories, love stories in modern history. Asking about love stories, Jamie, am I correct? It's an incredible love story, isn't it?
It is, it is. Because they didn't leave each other hanging ever. She wasn't going nowhere until the very end.
And that's what's
and
sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the sad part
about that was they wanted to be buried together, but the parents
mm-hmm.
threw a fit, and they're buried separately. They wanted to be buried together. But their family, I guess, now are trying to get the remains and put them together.
Yeah,
well,
there's disinterment and stuff.
We're not done yet, correct?
That's right. That's right. They have a mock grave site set up in the museum there in Gippsland. So when we visit that, we'll have to check that out because. Again, they wanted to be buried side by side, so there's a mock-up kind of little graveside there with the monuments and stuff inside, but it's inside the museum. So
they're buried
in Texas because they were from Texas.
Well, Matt, we're going to have to start publicizing this investigation because this is the absolute legitimate investigation on the greatest American love story. I mean, Romeo and Juliet was the greatest European love story. And anybody can say what they want to disagree. But Dr. John says this is the greatest American love story. Jamie, do you agree?
I agree. And I actually like this way better than Romeo and Juliet.
Well, look, in Europe, that was a big deal. Okay? It was. This is the greatest American love story. And this is what I want everyone to understand. Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker, the two. And it was never Clyde Barrow. It was never Bonnie Parker. It was always Bonnie and Clyde. And that's, let's face it, When people talk about it that way, that's what it is. Jamie, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Matt, do you agree?
Yeah, they were one. They were one. I mean,
yep.
You can't deny that. That's the fact. That's what people dream of. They had the dream that people are looking for.
Yeah. And speaking of the dream, I've got to close this up with a very sad announcement that many of us heard this morning, that David Crosby of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young has died. And all the great music that that group had, and they put it together for us, he has passed away. I'd like to say thank you, David Crosby, for everything that you did for us and all the great music that you've done. And I want to say thank you, Matt and Jamie, and I would like to ask you to come back in 2 weeks, do more research, and let's keep this going because I think it's a very important thing. Now, in the Southeast where we're located, and that's where the majority of our listeners are, they don't know that much about Bonnie and Clyde unless they've seen that incredible mm-hmm. film, which won about 9 Academy Awards, including Best Film, Best Actor, and Best Actress. So you know it was one of the greatest films of all time. So I just wanted to ask you folks to come back. Now, Matt, you'll be back next week, and so will Kyler, because we had it at this special time. I wanted to say thank you very much. Jamie, thank you so much, and it was good to see you at Georgia Bigfoot.
Yes, it was awesome. Thank you.
You are welcome. And, Matt, thank you very much for being at Georgia Bigfoot Conference. And we'll see you. Now, Matt, we'll see you back next week. Is that okay?
Yes. Yep.
If you're not,
absolutely.
You'll be in trouble. You will get written up and sent to the principal, okay?
All righty.
All right. I wanted to say thank you to everybody, and we'll see everyone next time on Scary Cast Tuesday. It's a scary thing. We love it. Thanks. And now everybody needs to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Good night, everyone.
Goodbye. Take care. See you. Bye.